You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi there and welcome back to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day everybody, welcome back to the ESPN Footy Podcast for another episode, a very special podcast episode because for those not listening in the traditional sense as a podcast, we are in the brand new ESPN studios here in Melbourne and it's great to be in here. We're giving things a bit of a test run. It's all looking pretty schmick, which is really nice. My name's Matt Walsh, I'm joined by Jasper Chalobah, who's our draft expert. Jasper, under the bright lights, nice to have you in here.
It's awesome to be here. I feel like I'm in the war room with David King. talking about brand.
It's very good. We've all got our laptops as well, Jake Michaels. Things are looking pretty nice down here.
Well, it's a significant step up from where we did our first episode, what, six years ago?
Five and a bit years ago, yeah. We were talking about this before we came on air, and the first one we did was just in the makeshift cinema in the ESPN, or in the Disney studios.
Putting dining tables together.
Correct,
clipping up the
microphones,
mics.
Using really old school sort of tech. So, yeah, things have come a long way, and things have come a long way in this studio. I remember being in it about 2 or 3 months ago, and it was a bit of a concrete shell. And now look at it, it's absolutely beautiful. So if you are listening as a podcast, highly recommend you check out the socials. It'll be on YouTube, the Footy Tips Twitter, we'll have it up there, and you can sort of see the surroundings, and hopefully we'll be using this a little bit more.
Oh, I think we will. Stay tuned. Yeah,
absolutely stay tuned. But that's not what we're here for. We are, as you can see in the background here, for a bit of a draft special. We're going to talk all things draft. And Monday's the big day, Jasper, and it's creeping up really quickly. It's the first of two big days. Firstly, I guess, how are you feeling? Because it's all sort of coming to a head after a year of massive work for the website at espn.com.au/AFL.
Yeah, this is like Christmas for us, draft watchers. It's Monday, November 20th. That'll be the first
20th, my apologies.
First round.
Do you prefer this to, say, the grand final?
I love draft night. Yeah,
yeah. So they were
the ground, with the knowledge that Essendon will never be in that grand final. Yeah, I think this is my Christmas.
So it's going to be a bit of an elongated first round, though, we feel. So the way that the AFL has structured things, there's going to be free agency compensation. Obviously, there have been AFL assistance picks handed out. There's going to be some trading of picks potentially, and there are going to be bids matched. So basically, we could have a night that actually drags out a little bit longer than what we would traditionally see as like 18 picks.
Exactly right. I think we might see 28 picks on that first night in the first round. That's because we've had guys like Tom Doddie leave and get compensation for that in end of first round. But you've also got four Suns Academy players who I think will have bids matched. A Dog's father son and a Hawk's father son as well. So it really extends out. It's going to be a long night. It might even be longer than the second night. I think they'll be about the same.
Right, so that'll be the first round on the first night and then second round onwards on the second night. And the first round could be longer.
I think so. There's a decent chance we might see 56 or less picks.
Interesting. Well, before we crack into some draft discussion and maybe a bit of a live phantom draft as well, Jake, there is some news floating around. So the fixture has been released midway through November, maybe a little late for my liking. I don't know about you, but I like to sort of
plan out
my
year. Travel plans. You put your leave in like 18 months in advance.
That's all right, isn't it? It's got to make sure.
Can't even book flights that far in advance.
So the big news, I guess, coming out of the fixture release is that it's not just round one. We're going to have an opening round, which is a pre-round one, which is round one. And then round one would be round two. Can you try and make some sense of this for me?
I have been trying to make sense of it since it was announced. It doesn't make any sense. And I don't get why it's an opening round into round one. That, by definition, is round one.
Yes.
Whether you want to have one game, four, or the full nine, that's the first round. So it's a bit strange which the way in which they've done it. And I don't really like it, to be honest. I can't find any particular reason as to why they've done it. A lot of people are saying, with the NRL taking their product to Las Vegas at the same time, but it's not the same weekend.
Yeah, it's a different
weekend. So it doesn't match up with that. So you're not tapping into that market. To only have the four games when, the interest should be as high as ever. The games are fine. I have no issue with the games. And some of them I'm really eager to watch, but I don't understand why it's not just a traditional nine-game round. I feel like this happens a lot where,
trying to
whether you want
much.
To call it new management or whatever you want to say, they've come in and it's like, we've got to change something, when I don't think they really needed to.
But the interesting thing to me is you look at some of the teams that are playing in the opening round. So, for instance, Carlton, obviously back-to-back games at the Gabba, which might be rare.
So the Blues will play two games at the Gabba against the Lions.
In a row.
And that won't, neither of them will have been in a season. Like, yes. Like in a home and away season.
That's a very ESPN stat for you. but also, then they'll have a bye in week three, so in round three. So yeah, it's kind of this weird situation where they're going to be chucking these extra... it doesn't make a lot of sense. What does make a lot of sense, I think, though, after a lot of public pressure, I feel, is bringing forward the Friday night start time. So instead of the traditional 7.50, which was always, I think, the case because they always wanted to get Better Homes and Gardens on Channel 7 and all that kind of stuff, I think they've finally relented and they've brought it forward by 10 minutes.
Now, so 7.40 starts. Now, so you've been big on this for quite a few years now that you reckon
I'm an early night kind of guy.
Yeah, so 7.40, is that 10 minutes enough? Does that make enough of a difference or... should it have been 7.20 or 7.30? What's the ideal time? The other thing is, and we've said this before, and this is something we had with Christian early last year when we were talking about some of the weird, quirky stats, five, 6 rounds into the year.
Yes.
We'd already had about 25 different start times. So I don't understand why all night games don't start at 7.30 or 7.20 or 7.40, whatever they want it to be.
I think you can kind of stagger them on different nights, and there might be reasons to do that. I think Thursday's being a little bit earlier again, so that they've been... now shunted to 7.30. So some of them were 7.20, some of them were 7.25
I don't mind that. I think that...
why not just make it 7.30, a blanket rule, night games.
Oh, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Except maybe Saturday when they have two on at the same time. And you could say start one at 7.30 or whatever it might be, and then there might be one out west and you can start it a little bit later and therefore you can chop and change between them if you want to watch them on TV. But
so what does a Friday night game traditionally finish at? Around
10.40? Yeah, pretty late.
Yeah, by the time you're out of the if you're out of the stadium.
And then you've got to watch Roaming Brian.
Well, if you're at home, you get the pleasure.
You're thinking from a journalist perspective. What time do you get out of there?
But, I don't think 10 minutes is going to make a huge amount of difference, but it's, I mean, at the end of the day, you're going to get into bed 10 minutes earlier. So.
Well, I got my wish with the Friday night start times. You got your wish with more Thursdays. So as it stands at the moment, most of the rounds have been scheduled in. So the final 9 weeks of the season haven't been scheduled in.
You say most, but it should be more.
It should be more. I feel like we're at a stage where we don't need to have a floating fixture. We don't need to have those games up in the air. We saw last year they kept pushing back the release of the last couple of rounds until the last possible moment. Yeah.
And it was a bit of a flop.
Yeah, and we ended up having a Friday night game that had absolutely no impact, I guess, on the final standings of the ladder or the final finishing position. So it kind of just goes to show you can kind of luck into these things, but you can also luck out of them. And there'll be fans out there who are disappointed they won't be able to book in their travel as early as they might like as well. So I don't really see the logic of it. But Thursday nights, every week except the bye weeks.
Yeah, and that is as big a tick as you can give the AFL. Yep. I think that's great. I think that was...
happy to bash them, but give them a tick when
they need it. Of course. And I think it was quite clear by the public, I think players like it. I think fans like it. I don't know anybody that doesn't like games on Thursday evening, and to have more of them, they should be on every round. And it's fair enough they don't have the bye weeks because we might be down to six games.
Sure.
And you don't want to prolong the round too much where you've only got one game on a Sunday or something like that. Mm. So I'm all for skipping it on the bye weeks, the full bye weeks now, because we're going to have, as you said, Carlton in a bye in round three. We're going to have byes all the time now. But yeah, Thursday night games should be every week.
About 110 or so days until the first game of the season, so it will creep up very quickly.
You got a what caught my eye?
Oh, we can do this? Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
You haven't got anything.
Firstly,
I don't actually have to think about that.
Anzac Day, you're going to open up the round seven now, which is, I think that's nice. That's a Wednesday and a Thursday.
Also, it's something you noticed if you were a regular listener to this.
That's a good point. Channel 9.
And then also, I think Gold Coast got the best fixture.
Yeah.
And that might be the Dimmer effect. They play North Melbourne twice, they play West Coast twice. That's probably four wins. I think they're set up really well to make a finals charge.
100%. This is their year. This really is. This could be the makings of a big landmark sort of year for the Suns. Really should be making finals for the first time in the club history. We're going to get into it, as you said, off the top. They could have secured four players in the first round of the draft. New coach and I think something we mentioned last year as well.
It's lining up.
Everything's aligning, but they're young. All their good players are young. They don't have a top 10 player on their team that's over 27 really. Yeah. So
who would be the oldest? I mean,
Miller. I think he's 26 or 27. So they're heading in the right direction. There's a lot of things that are aligning for the Suns.
Yeah, that that opening round, I was going to say round one, but that opening
round. It is round one. We should just call it round one. I refuse to call it round one.
But that fixture, and you've got a piece out on the website, so espn.com.au/AFL, about the five must-watch fixtures of the first five rounds.
Yep.
And that is obviously one of them.
It is. I mean, it's going to be massive. You've got one club, I think, that everyone thinks is trending in the right direction, and the other one probably going in the wrong direction. There's a rumour about Dustin Martin. Does he end up going there following Dim Hardwick?
So maybe he enjoys the surrounds of, what is it called now, Heritage Bank Stadium so much.
Yeah, get him up there. And then, of course, we've obviously got the grand final replay, Collingwood-Brisbane. I think that's round three from memory. As you said before, Carlton go back up and play Brisbane in that prelim final rematch at the Gabba. So there are a lot of great games to look forward to early on.
Absolutely. But we're here to talk about Monday. Monday is the big day and there's heaps to play out. So obviously there's many moving parts still, Jasper, to all this. So obviously West Coast have pick one and they're probably not going to be trading it despite, you know, sort of rumours up until recently where Harley Reid could have been on the trading table. However, North have the next two. There's some big names there. It's going to be the Suns' biggest draft since, well, ever, as we kind of said before, because...
Certainly,
At the end of the day, there are these academy players, and this might have been why the Suns kept sort of pushing picks back into the next year and into the next year, and you kind of think, oh, why are they trading players and getting picks in, you know, and salary dumping, all that kind of stuff? You can kind of see the logic now, right?
Yeah.
Because, as you said, there could be four players selected in the first round alone, and these are players that are, well, Jed Walters is probably the most highly touted key position player on the board.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Ethan Reed, a tall ruck kind of guy as well. We've got Jake Rogers and Will Graham, these sort of midfield picks. So they could have all four picks done and dusted by the first evening of the draft and have added to their list significantly all in about an hour's worth of
And all four of those guys would be expected to be playing for them next year.
Yeah, well, they're all really physically developed. And I think what you see from the academy boys, Caden Cleary down at the Swans as well, is they're more professional and they're more physically developed than other kids around the country.
So interesting. And you know, we talk about depth a lot and how the comparison between, you know, super drafts and all that kind of stuff. But where does this draft sort of land? Because we are talking about these, you know, quote-unquote big names. And I think the way that footy media goes and the more that people consume, the more people know these names earlier. But how does it compare to previous drafts? Because we have this sort of indication that I'm getting, having done a lot of reading, a lot of listening and chatting to you, is that there are probably these sort of like top 6 to 8 draft prospects and then another smaller group that goes beyond that, sort of maybe 10 to 12, and then it starts to fall away a bit. Where are we kind of seeing the real top end talent here?
There's a consensus in a top 8, I reckon.
Yep.
And then if you want to include Suns Academy boys, I have 3 in my top 12, and I think the top 12 is fantastic.
Crazy.
So I think we're going to get a really good top 10 this year, and that's kind of the pinnacle of previous drafts when you look back and you say that was a super draft.
So just going back to West Coast with pick one, obviously they still hold it. What's the likelihood? Because they still get worth noting, they still can trade it.
As soon as things open up on draft night, they can potentially trade it.
They can make a trade. What do you reckon is the likelihood of that happening? What do you give it a percentage-wise that happens?
Live trades have been around for about 3 years now, and we haven't seen in the last 2 years much. Last year, Hawthorn traded up with the Swans to grab Josh Weddle. Great result for them.
Mm-hmm.
This year, pick one, I give it a 5% chance of being moved. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they probably have by now told Harley Reid that they're going to be taking him, and I'm pretty sure he's really happy to go over West.
So it was pretty clear they weren't going to give up pick two and pick three for the pick one.
That's probably the deal that West Coast is holding out for. It's not going to happen.
And it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So the reason I bring this up is because, like you said just before, that it seems to be that top 8 to 12, and then it does fall away a little bit. So their next pick was pick 15 North. So 2 and 15 was never really going to get it over the line.
If they were going to trade down, they would have had to be guaranteed to get Daniel Curtin as well as one of those top two
or
three
WA prospect in Curtin.
Exactly.
So I think that's really interesting because, you know, 2 and 3, I think North has a great hand. And more often than not, and we've sort of done a little bit of like light research about this, but you just sort of go back through the years and look at, you know, number 2 and number 3, and you pick any number in the top 10. And in terms of actual output over many, many years, you can throw a blanket over these guys. It's not like the number one pick is guaranteed to be giving you a certain output over the years
There would be very few number one picks that alone have done more than what 2 and 3 combined have done, achieved in their career.
Yeah. But Reed, I guess, is this prospect that, you know, I look at him and I can't believe this kid is 18.
Yeah.
And you kind of look at the body and the shape that he has, and you think this is a 25-year-old who's had many pre-seasons and this kind of stuff. But in terms of a prospect and a football player, how good is he?
Yeah, he's special. He's the best underage player I've watched through my time. And that includes his bottom age campaign, which was incredible. He would have been a top pick one candidate last year if that was his top age campaign. For me, yeah, Dustin Martin's the best comp, and he's just got these explosive attributes, professionalism and maturity at his age already. He's done a lot of media, he's done a lot of chatting to recruiting teams, and he knows that he's the best player in this pool, and he acts like it.
Do you expect him to be further advanced than what Nick Dacos was by the end of his first season?
No, Dacos is, I mean, his first 2 years have been unheard of in the AFL. So you
different
can't,
kind of player.
You can't expect that of him.
And I ask that because I think by the end of year two, Dacos, very different. I mean, he could have very easily won the Brownlow medal if he didn't get injured. But by the end of year one, he was probably on the cusp-ish of the sort of top 50 players in the league.
Yeah.
Do you think we could be saying that about Harley Reid by the end of 2024?
Yeah, good point. Like, I reckon he's going to a different club. His club's not going to be as good, which will make it much more difficult for him. But if he was going to a Geelong or a Collingwood, he could be in the All-Australian squad.
But we're
next
expecting
year,
Reid to be in the centre bounce for a lot of this first season,
so,
compared to someone like Dacos.
So he's
going to
get the
year.
Opportunity, yeah.
He'll have the chances, right?
Yeah, he's best 22 right away, obviously, and I think he'll be one of West Coast's best players from the
get-go. If he goes to West Coast, as we're expecting, and this is not a shot at the Eagles right now because they are clearly struggling, as we all know, but is he already in their top five players before he's played a game?
Yeah, if you look at a guy like Jerry McGovern in that top five, despite the injuries, like, I think he's right up there with their very best. And maybe he's a best and fairest chance next year. We saw it with Harry Sheasel with North Melbourne.
Yeah. Came close,
We're seeing it with Victor Wembanyama in the NBA. It just goes in and it's that immediate impact.
It's almost hard to believe, and you wouldn't think this sort of 15, 20 years ago, that first-year players can come in and win a best and fairest. But these days, it can happen.
Harry Sheasel did it,
So it's certainly interesting, and these guys are just as professional as they've ever been. And it's
they
a good
and they come in far more advanced, and we've spoken about this numerous times over the years on the podcast. The players today, even going back 5, 6 years ago, they just come in so much more ready now. Than they ever did.
We mentioned it a little bit before, but trading picks on the night, so live trading, there's a little bit of a whisper that there might be a bit of this happening in this draft, especially maybe on the first night where clubs realise that players might either slide past where they think they might go and they think they can get up a bit. And as you kind of say, the depth around this sort of 8 to 10 to 12 mark, there might be some scrambling by clubs to try and get into that spot.
Yep.
Especially clubs, you look at the draft order and there are clubs like Geelong, GWS, Essendon, Adelaide, Melbourne, that are kind of in that sort of mid-first round range that might be looking to do it. Do you see any of these clubs trying to make a play to move up the board?
Yeah, well, it comes into play when you're talking about how even the draft is after that top 8, top 10.
Yes.
And that's why clubs think there could be sliders and there could be bolters on draft night, and that's why there might be a lot of picks traded. There's two from AFL Media kind of reported already, which is Brisbane's going to trade up for Gold Coast pick 24. So they'll get into the first round, and then Fremantle will trade up for pick 38 from the Gold Coast as well, which is just them, the Suns, being able to match bids with more points.
Yeah.
Now, so they're already going to be moving up before Harley Reid is taken with pick one. And then I think other ones kind of around that mark will be really interesting to see in terms of what North Melbourne wants to do. They want to trade up for Sydney's pick 12. Kinnear Beetson confirmed that yesterday. So if they trade 17 and 18 for 12, maybe that's a more a package for pick one that they could be considering there, West Coast, if they go pick 2, 12 and 15.
Yeah. In terms of a spectacle, I think it is something the AFL would want. And I think it's this trading on the night. I think that's what they probably imagined. There'd be a bit more of it when it was brought in. Because the draft itself can be a bit, not stale, but you have such an idea of, with all the phantom drafts and the amount of work that go into it now, you kind of have a really good idea of who's going in each spot, certainly in the first round before it happens.
The last kind of surprise I can remember is probably Will Phillips going pick 3 to North Melbourne. That was a huge surprise. Mm-hmm. Other than that, there's no shocks in these drafts.
Yeah, I guess you see enough tape and you talk to enough people and you go on the family visits and all that you kind of know what you're getting into in advance anyway. So, I guess what we're going to do is go through a bit of a phantom draft live on the show, a bit of fun. But we're going to do the first round, after bids. So we'll get out to sort of 28, as you kind of said. But there are a few other teams in there that don't have picks until a lot later in the draft. And one of them is really interesting. So Port Adelaide, obviously 69 is their first pick. And that's before all bids match and all that kind of stuff. So they're well out there. What do you kind of see Port trying to do in this draft?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of nice South Australian prospects around that mark.
Yeah.
Because South Australia had a really poor carnival. And they're, you know, the stocks have kind of slid. Will McCabe will probably be the only South Australian taken in the first round. And that's 28 picks.
Yeah.
But for them, you know, they've done their work of the trade period. And they know that they've, you know, sold the farm to get these players like a Radaglia and Zirk Thatcher into the club. Now it's just about consolidating the best team that they can get and trying to win a flag.
I mean, we've talked about Port a lot on the podcast and how they, underachieving is probably not the right word, but I guess they have in recent years, and that the pieces are kind of there. And you talked about before nailing one draft in particular, and Port managed to do that a few years ago. So they kind of have the pieces there, and having a good trade period as they did, I guess they don't need to go after the young, fresh prospects.
No, we've seen it with numerous teams that have been sort of at the top, they don't necessarily have, well, you don't get the top end picks like that. The problem with Port last year was the, and we forget how dominant they were in the midpoint of the year. They were just about co-flag favourites with Collingwood, longest winning streak in the league. It was the defence, and we said it time and time again on the podcast. Christian would bring it up ad nauseum, that the fact that they were just conceding too many points. That was the biggest issue, and they've addressed that, or at least they've attempted to address that with bringing in Zirk Thatcher, Radaglia, and trying to shore up the back line. I don't think anyone's doubting what the midfield can do and the forward line as well. So will they be around? They're gonna I think what do? You can't do much. So you're just going to take a flyer on someone, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and a couple solid ruckmen in there as well with Soldo and Sweet.
Yeah.
So if I guess from one end of the draft board to the other, we might as well start with round one and look at West Coast. They're picking Harley Reid.
Yes.
So talk to us a bit more about Harley and what we can expect to see from him, especially early in the next season.
Well, recruiters didn't know if he was going to back it up because he was 18 months ago, he was anointed this number one pick that you know, we haven't seen before. But he went into the midfield. He played centre bounce for Bendigo Pioneers at the AFL Academy. He copped a little concussion halfway through the year. He sat out 3 weeks. He was fine, but he sat out 3 weeks and then returned for the National Carnival. And then he played deep full forward and just dominated and kicked bags. So he's this, you know, pinch-hitting kind of forward who just is going to be an on-baller. Yep. His centre clearance work is phenomenal. His defensive work needs a little bit of improvement because he just, you know, he often gets the ball in those 50-50s. You don't often see him need to chase.
Yep.
But that's going to be the side to his game that needs to improve to be an AFL player.
You mentioned Dustin Martin as his best comp before. Just everything you describe, you may as well be describing Dustin Martin, particularly in the early part of his career. Something that I would like as a West Coast fan, given that they're likely to land him, is that he has committed to playing there and staying there and putting in the hard yards, which is a good sign given where the club's at and what we've seen with North Melbourne in recent years as well.
Played 3 VFL games throughout the year. The stat line here, so averaged 19.3 disposals. This is in VFL as a 17-year-old and 7.7 contested possessions. So you just know exactly what you're going to get.
And he played off halfback for those games.
It's just unreal. So number two, North Melbourne.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting because
Will they bid early? Force Gold Coast hand, more points.
They know that Jed Walter is the player that they would take if he was in the open draft.
Yes.
I think there are a couple factors here for why I don't have Jed Walter being bid on.
I'm
going to
ask you this. Is it a bit of goodwill between clubs saying, well, we won't bid on him right away, you know, maybe if we have an opportunity to trade or whatever
bridges,
down the road?
Right?
Yeah. Is that kind of part of it?
Potentially. I think there's a bit of back scratching going on here. Right. And Jed Walter is the second best player in the pool. They know that. Mm-hmm. But I don't have them bidding on him for a couple of reasons. Firstly, he didn't play the second half of the year with a knee injury he picked up for the Allies in the National Carnival. Right. Clubs won't know what the you know, kind of situation is with that knee injury. It doesn't seem serious, but it's a bit of a meniscus, and maybe there's something there that would ward them off. And then secondly, they picked Harry Sheasel and George Waldwell with picks 2 and 3 last year, and they're going to go back to the draft, and they're likely going to pick Colby McKercher and Zane Dersma. Mm. And I like they will like, you know, that symmetry of these, you know, top 2 and top 3 picks coming into their club in back-to-back years and being the catalyst for driving themselves up the ladder.
Yep.
Fair enough. So I guess Colby McKercher is kind of one of those guys who had an outstanding national championships as well. He was unreal. So he ended up being second across the chance for disposals per game, and third for clearances per game, and just will be one of those players that can find the ball.
I think Christian will be talking about him a lot next year because he's a ranking points stud. He averaged 150 ranking points, and he just doesn't stop racking up the ball inside, outside, blend. There's a few comps to Zach Merritt. I like Errol Goulden. I think the way he swoops for loose balls and charges with his pace, his endurance on the outside, and is really damaging with his disposal.
Yep.
We saw a couple late in the season, he kept improving his game to the point where his physicality was up to the best and he was fending off and exploding at the front of packs. That kind of stuff that where he's the most damaging midfielder on the ground, I think is why he's going to go with pick two.
We've already seen Wardlaw and Sheasel, as you said, and that seems already like tick, tick. If even one of these guys is a tick, and it looks like probably both are going to end up being that, they're another club that is starting to be moving towards that setup for success. If you can get that, if you just nail your midfield in two drafts.
And you've got three late first-round picks as well to target need at the back end.
So Zane Dersma, more of a forward half player to take with that pick three, which is the Ben McKay compo?
Yeah, he fell down my draft board halfway through the year because he was playing in the midfield and he didn't really look it. He's not a midfielder. And we saw in the second half of the year when he went to the forward line again, he kicked four goals against Vic Metro as a Vic country boy and tore that game to shreds, and then he just kept kicking goals for the Gippsland Power.
And stayed playing in the forward line.
He's just a forward 50 player, He's 189 centimetres, so he's a good size. He's got a great leap on him, and I think that he can play as kind of a third tall, but at ground level is where he's in his element. His speed and his explosiveness is just fantastic.
Is he likely to be pushed into the midfield later in his career, or if...
He reminds me a lot of Connor Rosie, who came into the... So he exploded in his first 2 years as a forward. Mm. Maybe he elevates to that level and he goes midfield. Through the midfield because that's just where he gets 25
the second touches. Most goals of any player in the talent league last year, so as in this season. So, I mean, you'd probably want him forward around the goals and then maybe as he builds a tank or if needed, as required. I mean, we talk about the midfield starting to look pretty deep all of a sudden, you know, in coming years. Maybe that is an option. So Hawthorn at pick four, are we going to have a bid here?
Yeah, I think Jed Walter will get bid on at latest here.
Right.
And, you know, Hawthorn would love to grab him, but the Suns have, you know, accumulated all these picks. They'll be matching Jed Walter's bid wherever it comes.
And in terms of comparing him to someone who is in the league or has been in the league, the name that I keep hearing get thrown around is sort of a Charlie Curnow. Yeah. So not a massive kind of 200-centimetre forward, but that sort of mid-size, hulking kind of... Good around the ground as well, good at ground
Fair
level.
Player.
Yeah, yes. Not a bad player.
Decent comp. He's a 197 centimetre now. He's grown a couple centimetres
really?
This
okay.
year.
Right.
Just the way he attacks the ball in the air is incredible. He has size. He has straight line speed as well. So on the lead, he's really dangerous. He can create separation really easily.
Which means that Hawthorn, I guess, gets bumped down to the next spot. Where do you see them looking?
This is going to be a really interesting pick right now. I'd say it's a 60-40, they're going to take Nick Watson. Dan Curtin is right in this range as well, the WA key defender. If we want to talk about him quickly, he's this really smooth-moving, composed key defensive interceptor who has also gone through the midfield. He's kicked goals up forward. He's just a footballer's footballer. He can win the ball at the ground level, but his aerial prowess is why he'll be drafted in the top 10. Clarko loves him. So that's going to be an interesting decision for North Melbourne as well.
Yeah, that is interesting. And you talk about Hawthorn at this pick, but also they've brought in Jack Inivan. So there could be a bit of a competition for slots in that small forward kind of range.
Exactly right, yeah. So Nick Watson is the player I have going here with about a 60% chance, I think, right now.
Or Curtin.
They've done a lot of work on Watson. So he trained with them. They've seen him kind of play throughout the year. He's kicked 70 goals across all competitions this year. He's played for four or five different teams, including school representative footy as well.
That's wild, isn't it?
He's 170 centimetres. So he's a really diminutive figure.
Interesting.
Bit of a Cody Waitman type where he attacks the ball. His aerial prowess is awesome for his size. And then the pressure around ground level is going to be really good as well.
Speaking of Waitman, the Dogs do have the next pick. So they'll be pushed down to number six. Where do you see them looking?
They want to restock their midfield, I think. I don't know if that has anything to do with what they think Bailey Smith will be doing in his future, but with McRae...
I think with Smith there or not, I mean, they do need that. Yeah. It's as clear as anything. There was far too much reliance on Bontempelli and Liberatore last year.
I mean, with Libba's 31 now, McRae's hitting 30 now, even Bont's getting a little bit older as well. So I think Riley Sanders is the perfect fit here, the inside beast of this draft. He won the Lark Medal as the best player at the National Championships.
Another Tasmanian?
Yeah. So there's been two Tasmanian taker with Colby McCurch and Riley Sanders now. And he just does not stop racking up the ball.
Question for you, and we'll get back to, I guess, Sanders in a second, but in terms of the Tasmanian prospects that you start to see now and the impending introduction of a Tasmanian team, would clubs be considering maybe the fact that there might be a go-home factor in coming years?
I tend to think we're a year or two away from that happening, but it's going to happen. Yeah. It has to. Like, it's going to get to the point where we're 2 years out from, and you think, gee, do I want to take this kid who might want to go back? Because I feel like if you've got a 5 year leeway, you're gonna get roots here. You're gonna set up
back in culture as well, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but it definitely will get to the point. I imagine. I don't know if you agree, but where that definitely comes into play.
There's talk about it this year because there are four top 20 candidates.
Could be a future
here.
Captain of a potential Tasmanian team.
And I think what clubs know is they can guarantee that there'll be big money offers to go home. Mm-hmm. But they've got it back in their culture. It's the same as drafting a WA kid or a Queensland kid.
But yeah.
So Sanders, as you mentioned, so number one disposal winner and equal number one score involvements at the under 18 champs. They just had an absolute blinder. And as you say, we'll just find the ball.
He just does not stop finding the ball inside, outside. His outside game developed really well this year. And he went from, I think he started about pick 15th ranked on my power rankings to start the year. And he's into the top six or seven just based off his ability to damage on the outside.
Is he a bit like Jack McRae?
I love McRae's ball use. McRae's ball use is fantastic. Sanders doesn't have that. But he does have the ability to just link play together with the chains. I think he's more of a Tim Taranto type.
Right.
Interesting. So the D's are next on the board. Obviously got that pick from Freo last year as part of the Luke Jackson trade. Do you see them taking a player? Is there going to be another bid match here? Because he talked about a lot of these Gold Coast Academy players being match bids early.
Yeah, I tentatively have a bid here for Ethan Reid, who I think has a lot of similarities to Luke Jackson. When you look at the D's list, they really need something past Max Gawn.
Yeah, okay.
They brought in Darcy Fort, but they really need something past Max Gawn into the future, and I think Ethan Reid would be perfect for them. The Suns will be matching this. He's 202 centimetres. He's an absolute unicorn of this draft. He ran a sub 6 minute 2 kilometre time trial, which was good for third in the entire draft pool, and his ball use, his skills for his size. I think he'll start his career as a defender because he's a little bit, he's a bit of a beanpole right now. He won't be a ruckman to start his career, but off halfback, he'd be perfect.
And then, so I guess after that, you're looking at the D's looking somewhere else. So potentially, this is where Dan Curtin gets taken?
And this could end Dan Curtin's slide. He could be taken with pick 2 at North Melbourne.
So he has a range of...
And I think the latest he'll be taken is here with Melbourne at pick 8, including 2 Suns Academy bids. He's been so highly touted for a long time. He won the best on ground for the grand final curtain raiser last year, where he kind of announced himself as a top 5 prospect.
Right.
And then this year he's had another growth spurt, 197-ish centimetres, and he can really find the footy as well. He uses it well. He rebounds. His transition game's awesome. He went into the midfield and looked like Bontempelli at times for WA, so there's a lot to like.
So obviously he played Waffle League as well, so played against the big boys.
Exactly right, and he looked really at home. There are times where he got out-muscled. He's 18 years old, obviously, but I think that did nothing but solidify his credentials as a top 5 prospect.
Jake, D's going back to the well in West Australia. We're not scared off by the Luke Jackson happenings and being traded after a couple of years.
Well, it's funny you say that because you just said, Jasper, that they need to look past Max Gawn. Well, they had that. They had that with Luke Jackson, and then they went with the Brody Grundy experiment. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, I guess, with them. And I guess the other area of concern throughout last year was this year was the forward line and whether they needed to sort of bolster the stocks there.
Yeah.
So I think the D's are still there enough, close enough around the mark to be a contender this year, though.
This pick's also the first live trade candidate, I think. This pick for Melbourne, and West Coast will come for it. I think if they want Dan Curtin, they'll offer their future first. I think that's a live possibility on draft night on
Considering,
Monday.
Considering, I guess, the range that you have him being at, he's a top 5 prospect.
Well, I think they probably have him rated in their top 3 or 4, with Colby McKercher.
So keep an eye on that. So potentially.
And, Jake, if you were Melbourne, would you accept the Eagles' future first, which is likely a top 2 pick next year?
Well, I think you'd have to.
Great question. I mean, the D's are poised to go again regardless, right? I think that's a great call. I think that's a no-brainer. It's a win-win for both teams. And it's one you can kind of shake hands on, and I think there's no losers.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely. So the Giants have the next pick, which will be pick 9. That's tied to Richmond, so obviously got that in a trade last year as well. Where do you see the Giants looking?
Yeah,
it's Giants gonna be, interesting one. It's going to be really interesting because they've got their key defensive stocks are awesome, and you know, they've obviously found Sam Taylor, and what they've done in previous drafts has gone to the well with key defenders, and they've kind of brought in like a Lekalier and that type. So they don't need to go key defender here. I think this is where Conor O'Sullivan will be highly sought after for a lot of teams. Hawthorn, North Melbourne, Adelaide in particular will be really interested in trading up with GWS to secure this pick. As it stands, I have the Giants taking another Tasmanian, so 3 in the top 10. James Leek, this halfback, really athletic, incredible mark for his size. He's 187 centimetres, and then he went forward and kicked 5 goals for the Tassie Devils in a final to end the year as well. He has played himself into top 10 conversations, and I don't think anyone would be surprised to see him taking this high anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
So the Giants are kind of in this strange position, and they have a number one pick waiting in the wings as well from last year who didn't see a lot of game time. So and there could be a lot totally of this big talent coming into this team in a hurry.
Absolutely. It's incredible how quickly Adam Kingsley's turned this team around and the way we perceive the Giants, where they were rebuilding beforehand, but now they look like a real grand final.
Just on Aaron Cadman, do you expect a bit of a leap from him next year?
Yeah, I looked at his stats and he finished the VFL really strongly. I think he was top 6 or 7 in the VFL for goal kicking. He finished he kind of finished up there, and he actually started kicking a lot of goals. So I think that we can expect him to be a best 22 candidate.
Key position players do take a bit of time sometimes. Cats, rare top 10 pick for them. Where do you see them looking?
Very rare top 10 pick. They took Jai Clark last year. Obviously, they got the Gold Coast pick, which was included in their thinking for the Academy boys. But Nate Caddy, I think, really appeals, and a decade on from them, bringing in his uncle.
Josh
is his uncle. So Nate is this, he's 193 centimetres, so he's a little bit shorter than your usual key forward. For me, he's taller than Charlie Kerner was in his draft year. He's bigger than Charlie Kerner was in his draft year, and he plays a lot like him with his speed, his attack on the ball in the air. He really clunks marks, and he can wheel around on his right foot and kick him from 55. So. There's a lot to like about Nate Caddy. I have him ranked a bit higher than this and a bit higher than consensus because I think he's the wild card of this draft. He could be anything, and you could be doing redrafts in 5 years' time and have him not going number one or two.
I think earlier in the year, you probably had him a bit higher as well. I think a lot of boards had him a bit higher. Yeah. Is he a bit of a slider this year?
Yeah, I think he could be. He could be passed on by Geelong here if James Leek or Caleb Windsor come into their thinking as well. So I think there's a possibility that Essendon pick him up. I don't think any clubs are really trading up for Nate Caddy as well.
Right. Interesting.
So why is that? Why has he slid so, or why do you expect him to slide so far?
He had an up and down campaign. He broke his leg on the eve of the season and he came back pretty quickly from that. He had chicken pox, which ruled him out for 3 weeks. That was quite severe, I've been told. So he had a bit of an inconsistent campaign, but he still had games where he averaged, he kicked 5 goals and had 25 disposals because he can go through the midfield and his ground level stuff is really good as well.
It is interesting because you say you could look back in 5 years' time and he's a top 2 or 3 pick from this draft. At what point in the draft do you pick for safety and security, knowing what you're going to get? And at what point does that transition to let's take someone with the highest upside, with the highest ceiling?
And recruiters often talk about this, if you take the best available and the highest upside, or you take need, at what point you kind of do that. I think around 30-odd in this draft, you can definitely start taking need, because a lot of ruckmen and key defenders, they're quite scarce in this draft, so you kind of want to be able to grab them. That's why they might go a bit higher. But I think that's fraught with danger. I think you should be taking best available at all times. And then I don't think you're going to get the best player in this draft outside of the top 8, in this draft. But I think there's still enough depth around to be taking best available.
There you go. So the Dons are on the board next. Where do you see them looking? Because you mentioned a name before, Conor O'Sullivan, which is who you have in your most recent Phantom draft. Is he likely to still be on the board at this point?
It's going to be interesting, and it might depend on a club trading up for him because he is highly sought after. If he gets to Essendon, I don't think they'll trade back. I think they'll take him. He will be in their mix for the top 8 or 9 prospects that they really like in this draft, and he's perfect because he's mature, kind of 92 kilos already, key defender, 198 centimetres. He's a great size. He uses the ball beautifully. Allies coach Mark McVay gave him the Allies MVP after their undefeated national championships, and he absolutely raves about him. He thinks he's going to be an absolute star. Mature head from the Albury area. So he's travelled a lot through his footy, and he looks like a really likely type.
Talk about this sort of range of the Dons at 11, Crows at 12. Could the Dons potentially also slide back in this draft? I know that there are prospects that they could almost split it for a couple of picks, or a pick in the teens and a pick further back. Is that also a possibility?
Yeah, they've been linked to West Australian Riley Hardiman, who's a halfback. If they were going to slide back, I think they'd want to pick him up as well as someone else. Maybe a Zach Reid's brother, Archer Reid, is in this draft, another tall that they could consider.
Yep.
For mine, if O'Sullivan's available, they won't trade. If they're making a choice out of a Darcy Wilson and a Caleb Windsor, maybe they do trade back in an Adelaide or a North Melbourne trade up to grab one of them.
There you go.
It's an interesting point, though. So, again, going back to what you said earlier, pardon me, once you get to pick sort of 12, there is that fall-off or around about that mark, right? If you're pick 13, 14, 15, is it worth moving on from that pick, looking either at getting further picks down in the 20s, 30s, or whatever, or throwing ahead to next year's draft?
Is there a kind of a dead spot? Not a dead spot, but is there a kind of a spot where you go...
You're not getting the value that you would in another draft.
I think this kind of point of the draft is where if you don't have the player slide to you that you want, you can definitely be looking to trade out because that's where the gap is.
Yeah.
Including those Suns prospects, this is where... the point in the draft is where some clubs will hate it, other clubs will love it because there's a slide.
And this is where we might see a bit more of that trading going
Interesting.
On.
Exactly right.
So the Crows are on the board next at 12. Where do you see them heading?
If they have Darcy Wilson and Caleb Windsor available to them, I think both suit them really well as running wingmen, really skillful, fast, and you know can accumulate the ball a lot. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly what the Crows have needed for a long time. And... for me, I think Darcy Wilson pips Windsor here if they had to choose. I think that's the way they would go. He's kicked goals as a forward as well. He's 186 centimetres, so he's a pretty good size.
Are they both South Australian products, did you say?
Neither are.
That's Victorian.
So, yeah, Vic Metro, Caleb Windsor, and then Vic Country is Darcy Wilson. They've gone with Josh Rochelli with the Murray Bush Rangers beforehand, and that's where Wilson's from.
Yeah.
So the Ds are on the board next again. So I guess if Adelaide doesn't take one of those boys, they'll probably look at the other?
I think so. I think Caleb Windsor, if they will consider him at 8 because they love his speed on the outside of contest, his ball use going inside 50. I think that's what the Ds really lacked in finals last year and also goal kicking. But for mine, they're heavily linked to Colton Tholstrup, who I have going a pick after them. If both are on the board, I think Windsor will be taken, but it might be a bit unlikely that Windsor's still around this mark. I think I have him sliding a little bit here. So if Windsor isn't available, I think they'll take this enigmatic, really fun to watch WA forward Colton Tholstrup.
There you go. So the Swans, you say that Falstrip's on that list there. They also have an academy product of their own, so Caden Cleary. He's probably not in that conversation at that point to be matching bids.
Yeah, they'll be confident that they've got ahead of a Cleary bid here, yep.
Yeah, excellent. So tell us more a little bit about Falstrip. I've seen his name a little bit around, but can you just let the listeners and the viewers know a little bit more about what we can expect from him at the Swans, if the Swans pick him up?
Yeah, well, I have the Swans taking him because I think they've... they love character.
Yep.
He's a really high character, mature leader. He's played all waffle footy this year with bigger bodies. He's done tagging jobs as a forward. He's kicked goals. He's averaging a goal a game. He's done a lot to really elevate his standing in this pool this year. And then he went into the draft combine and was dominant. He won the agility test. He looked really good in the 20 meter sprint. And then he also did really well in the 2K as well, which shows a lot of maturity, I think, and professionalism in the way he goes about it. He's from Esperance in WA. So he's a country boy at heart. And he's got some cult hero traits. I don't want to say it too often, but yeah.
Swans have had success with WA boys in particular as well. So maybe there's a thinking that they could also do that there.
Well, it's already been a very strong off-season for the Swans.
Yes.
Great trade period. Being able to get, pick 12, and or which might end up being around pick 14, did you say? So, yeah, that would be a big win. But to bring in someone like Taylor Adams, who's a little bit out of favour at Collingwood, bring him in, and Brody Grundy as well. I think it just bolsters that midfield and a team that was already on the rise the last couple of years.
I think the Swans are also a candidate to be bidding here as well. Will McCabe is an option for them, as well as Jordan Croft. These are two Hawks and Dogs father sons respectively. Last year we saw them take a bid on Max Michelinie, they bid on Harry Rouston just to buy some time to trade that pick.
After that pick, so the Swans at 14, as we say, after some bits and pieces move around, it's the Saints at 15. So there's a few options here, I guess, but there's probably going to look kind of, I guess, nearby and look to someone called Harry Dematia, who's a Dandenong Stingrays player. So probably not too much of a move for him.
Yeah, exactly right. And clubs have raved about Dematia's footy knowledge. His IQ on the field's great. His IQ off the field is incredible. I chat to him at the National Combine, and he looked superb. I thought at the Combine, he's a speed demon on the edge of packs, and he's played forward, he's kicked goals, he's played as a lockdown defender on Nick Watson in the championships. Mm. He's also played on ball as an inside midfielder. So there's a lot to like about Dematia, and he could go a little bit higher than this, I think.
Really? So he would have been, I don't think he was too high on too many people's draft boards earlier in the season, but he's come with a bit of a bullet.
Yeah, exactly right. He had a really strong season, and it's only this season that he's chosen to go away from cricket. He was running bats out to Marnus Labuschagne at the Boxing Day Test.
Is that right?
Last year, yeah.
Fair enough.
And this is the full footy kind of diligence that that has him working his way up.
Interesting. So the Crows are next on the board via Gold Coast in that Chris Burgess trade. Who I think the Suns got that from Melbourne. So that pick's kind of been around the traps a little bit. But at 16, it is the Crows.
Yep, this is, I think, if Will McCabe hasn't been bid on yet, I think he'll be bid on at this point. He's going to be a Hawks player. He's a father-son, and he's a really athletic key defender who's been playing in South Australia, so right under the nose of the Crows, who obviously need some key defensive depth. That's why they're going to try and trade up for Connor O'Sullivan, I think. And I think the Hawks will match a bid pretty quickly on draft night.
So there are a few father-sons, I guess, that we might see a little bit further down. Not as many as we've seen in previous years, nor as highly touted, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm. But he is the first in this group.
Yeah.
What can Hawks fans, I guess, expect in terms of an immediate impact? Is he one of those players that can come in and have, not that I want to say a Dacos-like impact, but or is it more of a slow?
I don't think anyone's going to come in and have the Dacos impact.
Previous years.
He's thinner, but I love his athleticism. He's really fast. He's got a great leap on him. I think a bit of what we saw with Sam De Koning for Geelong, where he is undersized, but if he's getting a chop out and getting a bit of help from James Sicily and stuff, he can play on those bigger bodies, I think.
Yep.
Jake, so Monday night's the big night. You're going to be there for ESPN as well. There's going to be, obviously Jasper's going to be there. We might get some other people down. You're going to be chatting to a few of these prospects, hopefully, afterwards. There is going to be a plan to do some bits and pieces for the website, so you can keep an eye on that. ESPN.com.au/AFL is where you'll find that sort of stuff. But I think what I really enjoy about the draft night in particular is when you talk to these guys, they haven't had a whole heap of media training. So this is kind of the point of their careers before they get taken in by the clubs, before they get told you can say this, you can't say that, all that kind of other stuff, where you can get a little bit out of them.
Yeah, you get not that they're not honest, but you get the raw sort of emotion, and you get, you do get that sort of the honesty and how they're feeling.
Yeah.
It is great to speak to them at that point. Also, before they are injected into club land and they become
robots.
Men, I sort of guess. Like, they're kids still. So,
And I guess there's also this added, you talk about Will McCabe and being a father-son, I guess there's also that added sort of pride that you get from these guys. So I'll be really interested, you know, if you have a chat to him on Monday night, sort of the attitude that he has towards, you know, going and playing at a club that his dad did.
Yeah. No, definitely. We want to try and bring you guys as much of the immediate reaction as possible.
So the Crows
of draft night.
Slide down. So 17. 17. Yeah. Adelaide. Where do we see them?
So after that bid, they'll be at 17. Charlie Edwards is one they've been heavily linked to. He didn't play for Vic Metro. He's a Sandy boy. He didn't play for Vic Metro. He didn't play for the AFL Academy. And all this representative footy he missed out on because he was a really late developer. But the second half of the year, he won a premiership with the Sandy Dragons as a midfielder. He's 191 centimetres, and he's got this incredible burst of speed on him. And I think clubs are looking at that and kind of projecting what he could become as an inside midfielder with that power out of stoppages and getting really excited about it. He has a neat kick. I think he's rounded out his game really well. So a nice athletic type that I think would be a point of difference for the Crows, who have Rory Laird and Jordan Dawson in their midfield.
I've just been told we're running out of time, so we might need to whip through these a little bit quicker. But next up, we do have North Melbourne are on the clock. Could we see a bid matched here, though, for someone, another father-son?
Yeah, this might be the last point where Jordan Croft has a bid on him. He's the Western Bulldogs' key forward. He's really athletic as well, but what I love about him is his set shot routine's beautiful. So I think he can project to become a good key forward. He's going to be another Dogs young tall, and they might
got a few of them.
They might try him down back as well.
Yeah.
The Giants are next up on the board as well. So this could be this will be their second selection. Where do you see this?
That North Melbourne bid, I think they'll take Riley Hardiman if
yes, of course.
They match the Dogs match that bid. He's been linked to Essendon heavily, but this running WA defender with leadership traits and I think he had a really strong year.
Fair enough. The Suns could also match a bit in here, so Jake Rogers could be around this mix as well.
Yeah, I think this is about the right spot for Jake Rogers, who could slide down a little bit. I have him ranked at 12. This is a pick 20 where he could be bid on. A bit of a Tuke Miller type.
And Will Graham is the other academy prospect, so potentially around that 24 to 25 mark. You did say that he was invited to the combine, so they do expect that, I guess, they'll pick up all four of these guys.
They expect him to be taken. At that point, I think Collingwood is really interested. They might bid on him.
Interesting. There are a few teams that haven't yet had a pick, so obviously the Pies are in there with their selection. Where do you see them looking for their first first foray?
It's going to be really interesting. They've been linked to Archer Reid, the brother of Zach, who's this 203 centimetre tall, he's going to need to fill out a lot. But I love that he has these long limbs that can mark it at the highest point. He's done a bit of ruck work as well. So I think he matches up with Collingwood in terms of needing some tools to develop. I have them taking Lamont Luau, who is this really speedy, athletic halfback out of the GLB Rebels. So a country boy. And he's been in that first round frame for a long time because of his attributes with the ball. He's a really neat kick and he's defensively sound as well.
The Blues also have a pick in the first round. It'll get pushed right back down. So Ashton Moyer is probably where they're looking, I think, is on your board. And there are some other picks that will come. So before bids, Richmond at 29, Brisbane at 30. But as you say, they're probably going to try and move up in that situation. Freo 34 and Port Adelaide we touched on before. So there's plenty to happen.
Opening round.
It's a massive opening round, so much so that we actually have run out of time before we can get through them all. But Monday night is the night. Make sure you do keep abreast of everything on the website, so espn.com.au/AFL. There'll be reaction from Jasper. There'll be reaction from Jake. There's plenty happening. Jasper, first of all, thanks for joining us on the debut of the new set.
It's my pleasure.
We'll have to get you in next year as well, and we'll see if we can start tinkering with some bits
and
pieces.
We've still got a few more things in the pipeline that we half-teased.
I know. We need to lock that in. We won't reveal what it could be, but we do have some plans, I guess, coming up in coming months, and obviously for a big season. And six of the podcast next year, which we'll have to start earlier because of the opening round.
Opening round, yeah. Christian will be back, so
good stuff. Jasper, thanks again for coming down. Jake, good to speak with you as always. To everyone at home, we'll speak to you in the next episode.
Listen to all the latest episodes by subscribing to the ESPN Footy Pod, wherever you get your podcasts.